The Books Podcast, presented by Tim Haig.
Welcome to The Books Podcast. We're very proud of the authors we've welcomed to the show, names like Steve Richards, Helen Lewis, Lawrence Krauss. It's well worth scrolling down the site and discovering some of the many interviews we've done over the years. And, of course, do subscribe now on your favourite podcast player to hear them and tell your friends. Regular listeners will be familiar with my observation that there are some novelists whose new book is just automatically added to my reading list. I'm sorry to do this again, but I'm really thrilled to welcome one of that company, Scarlett Thomas, to talk about her terrific new novel, The Sleepwalkers.
Do men not think about their partners' mothers sometimes? When things get weird, for a long time we all kind of say, no, this is okay, this happens to lots of people, this is fine, you know, it's all fine, but it's not fine.
I ask you, gentlemen of the jury, is this the kind of book you'd like your wives and servants to read?
Scarlett, thank you for joining us on Books Podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me, I'm really excited to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. Let's start out by just laying down some markers. The Sleepwalkers, the premise is a newly married couple arrive on an idyllic Greek island for their honeymoon. Who are they?
They are Evelyn and Richard.
Curious now, I'm getting two words in.
Already?
We don't get to know their names until page about 70 for Richard or Evelyn and about 50 for the other one.
Richard you get to know immediately because it's a letter and it's like, Dear Richard.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that's fair enough.
But Evelyn, not for a long time.
So anyway, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You were telling me about your protagonists.
Yes, so Evelyn and Richard, they've just got married in the UK. They have learned a really devastating secret about themselves and their relationship during their wedding, and then they've been rushed off on their honeymoon, turn up on this Greek island, don't talk about the awful secret, but there are lots of tensions, and they go to stay at this hotel called the Villa Rosa, and the proprietress, which might be a word, is Isabella, and she's quite weird.
What? She's Evie finds her weird.
Oh yeah, Richard but is doesn't. She, no, Richard doesn't find her
but
weird.
This is the kind of novel it is, because and one of the problems with the novel is that you as a novelist, one of your virtues is that you ratchet up the stakes as things go forward. So there are going to be a lot of things we can't say because it'll spoil the progress of your revelations. But one of the things we can say is that the structure of the novel is that it's written in documents. The first big chunk is a letter that Evie is writing to Richard, telling him what's gone on and why it all matters.
Why she's leaving
and
him.
And then there's going to be and why she's leaving him, absolutely.
Crucially.
On the honeymoon.
Yes.
And then there's a letter from Richard and so on, and we can come back to that. But what we do find is that Richard does not find Isabella sinister.
No,
or,
no.
Peculiar or passive aggressive, as Evie does.
Or manipulating or gaslighting. No, and in fact, that part of the novel is based on something that really happened. But I basically went on exactly that holiday, it wasn't my honeymoon, to an island which I shall never name. And I've never really done this in a novel before, but Isabella was kind of a real person, and she did do that to my actual partner, who at one point literally did say the words to me, why can't you just be a bit nicer to Isabella? She wasn't called Isabella.
So we have then this structure which invites you as the novelist to go unreliable narrator all the way through, because we're getting one person's perspective, which then gets contradicted by other people's. And that's part of what you're interested in, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the unreliable narrator is such a fundamental part of all of us in a way, because, you know, how often do we ask ourselves, well, did I just imagine that, or am I misreading that? Or somebody else might tell you, well, no, you're just being paranoid. And then, you know, are you being gaslit or are you being given good advice? And when I was on the real version of the holiday, I was going through a bit of a career crisis. I've had some strange virus. I was hot all the time. I had an ear infection. It was a bit gothic and I was a bit mental. And so I really wondered whether I was seeing things when, you know, this woman in this hotel was kind of flirting with my partner and then just being really mean to me. And the stuff about the weird breakfasts, for example, that all really happened, and the towels.
The towels is a wonderful incident, because you write those things really well. You write lots of things well. You write domestic fights extremely well. They're always utterly plausible. It's more sinister even than a bit of passive-aggressive breakfast, isn't it? Because there are things like, Evie says, you know, this mirror's terrible in the room, and the next day there's a different mirror.
Yeah.
And she says, these paintings on the wall are awful. The next day they've gone. So there is clearly an attention being paid to this couple on the island by Isabella that is perhaps a little more than is conventional for on a honeymoon suite.
Yes, and I think one of the things that we learn, and obviously we do have to be careful about spoilers, but the book is a collection of sort of found artifacts and documents, and you know that from the beginning because there's a contents list.
I love that instead of chapters, contents list, letter A, and then
bloodstained, torn,
bloodstained, and a bit torn out of the visitor's book, mm-hmm. and then there's a series of charcoal sketches that aren't in the book, but that are listed and described.
But yes, so the idea that things are being recorded in this place, that records are being kept, or that somebody wants these kind of mementos of other people's painful real life and their experiences. So, you know, that's kind of a thing, and that interested me. So, yeah, you kind of don't know whether Isabella's just listening at the door or if there's a recording device in the room. but, yeah, Richard, bless him, you know, Evie presents him with all this evidence, like the paintings have gone, the mirror's been changed. Oh, he says, are you sure?
Yeah, because he's, you know, a typical man. And he goes, really? It was different, was it? And of course she... And the question, of course, in his mind might be, is she making it up? Has she just slightly lost her grip on things? And because he thinks a little bit about that anyway, doesn't he? That she's not necessarily making any kind of sense. Now, the sleepwalkers of the title are not Evie and Richard, or at least... not initially. I mean, perhaps they're supposed to echo it, and perhaps, you know, there are reasons that the story is being told to them. But it's a story that's told on this island. Who are the sleepwalkers?
So the sleepwalkers are a couple that stayed in the same hotel the year before, and they both drowned in a storm. So every year there's a big storm that comes kind of at the end of the season, washes the beach away and turns the island from being a kind of tourist hotspot into being just a kind of local place again. And so the previous year, they're called Claire and James. They've been staying at the Villa Rosa, and the story goes that he'd had a kind of breakdown. He was on medication. He went sleepwalking, walked into the sea in the middle of this storm, and his wife loved him so much that she followed him in and tried to rescue him.
And this is a middle-aged couple. This is not sort of
young. Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not like a honeymoon couple like our guys. So this is something that is supposed to have happened, and we take it on face value, although there may be more to it than that. And certainly Evie starts to imagine that there must have been something going on that was, again, sinister.
Yeah, absolutely. And spoiler alert, it was sinister.
So what we find is that Evie and Richard are on their honeymoon at this place, but... it's even after the wedding, it didn't go very straightforwardly. They've turned up for their honeymoon with Richard's best friend, Paul, and his new girlfriend, which is odd. It's all a bit, you know, the family way, if you remember that old film. And the Villa Rosa is not actually available yet because, this is brilliant, because Richard's mother booked it for them as a present, inconveniently and at the wrong time for them. I loved Annabelle. Richard's mother is fantastic. We never actually meet her in person, as it were. We just, you know, but she's just a character in these other people's lives. But she's an enormous character. Where does she come from?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I think Annabelle is... she's one of those kind of powerful women who seems to control everything in her life. But in fact... her life is completely out of control because her husband is involved with somebody else. Perhaps we won't say who at this moment,
but
somebody else.
But it's significant who it is.
It is significant, yes. But she doesn't seem to know about that. And then she obviously really loves Richard, her special son, although there's something a bit awry with Richard. You know, there has been ever since he was a child. And so that relationship between a mother and a son where she wants to nurture him, but she also thinks there's something a bit wrong with him, maybe wants to kind of, you know, maybe both mother and father want to palm him off on somebody who isn't ideal, because Evie is not who you'd really hope that your posh son would marry.
Oh, yes, he was from a privileged family, and she was working as a housekeeper when they get together.
Yeah, and her dad's a plumber, and, you know, she's just a normal person.
Yeah, we'll come back to that one too. How normal Evie is.
Okay.
This Annabelle is then... You see, I look at her, and from what we learn, she's sort of almost the mother-in-law from hell. She's controlling everything. She's booked the honeymoon at the wrong time. Actually inconvenient for Evie's career, and we were going to discuss in a minute what her background is. And yet, at one point, Evie says, I always got on rather well with Annabelle. Despite everything. And there are lots of reasons in their background where she might not have.
I mean, maybe Evie's being a little bit tart there, but also they have taste in common. They have a kind of aesthetic taste. And I think Evie aspires to something of what Annabelle is. So when Evie and Richard first check into the Villa Rosa, Evie describes it as smelling of wood smoke and incense, like the stately home she visited with her own mother, but like the kind of milieu that Annabelle would exist in. You know, that's Annabelle's sort of true state, you know, to be in a kind of mansion or, you know, somewhere refined and elegant. So I think in some ways Evie would like to be Annabelle, but she never will be.
You've sketched Evie's background in some detail. So tell us about her. What is her background? Who is she when she's embarked upon this wedding?
Yes, I'm just trying to think which bits I can say. She was a drama student and kind of got a bit lucky with an idea that she had for a one-woman show, I think around the time that, you know, one-woman shows were a big thing. And I suppose in my mind it's perhaps a little bit like Fleabag or something. So she's done a kind of one-woman stage show and then it's moved to television. But then she's said something unfortunate or she's rubbed people up the wrong way and sort of been kind of mildly cancelled. So she's had a, you know, a quick moment in the spotlight and then a come down. But her background is, you know, plumber's daughter, quite working class, you know, quite good at drama, but quite good at dramatising herself as well.
But then she's had this one big success, hasn't she? Which has given her a hunger for it. She's looking for the next one. And of course, everything she's writing, she half pretends she's preparing notes for the next one-woman show or whatever it is. Although it's all wildly autobiographical. So you look at it and think, is that true? Is that what she's doing? Or is she just fooling herself? Because she had quite a torrid past.
Yes. Yes,
in fact, torrid is a word I get from you. In Richard's letter, he said that she had the most torrid gap year of anybody he'd ever heard of. And by that, he meant sex.
Yes, although, well, he says that. And what you know is that she seemed to have lots of men fall in love with her and write her letters. And it's actually quite romantic. Whereas Richard arguably has had the more torrid past, if one wanted to be critical of him. But yes, bless him, he would think that was torrid.
Well, he would think that was torrid because he's got strange ideas about what he wants sexually out of a woman. At the time they marry, they're like 30 or something.
Yeah, I've got it on a spreadsheet somewhere.
Yeah, they're in that. So they're not kids.
No, they're in their 30s.
And she has had, well, she had a traumatic sexual experience at university, but she had already had a sex life before that, and not necessarily a desperately wholesome one before all of that. And I'm not sure her sex life afterwards is terribly wholesome either. And yet Richard wants somebody who's innocent, who thinks that sex is a bit dirty.
Yeah, who wears white a lot.
Who wears white. Yeah. And he says at some point that he'd sort of like to have to make her do it because she was a bit restrained in it. It makes you wonder why he married her.
Yes, but he also has a thing about maids and housekeepers, and she was his parents' housekeeper, and I guess that's where it started. And I think it's one of those relationships where it isn't ideal. It's not really what either of them want. I mean, Evie, you can edit this out if it's too much of a spoiler, but I don't think it is Evie's sort of in love with Richard's father. And
at one point she's making love with him and she says, I pretended it was Richard's father. And then her next sentence is something like, every girl thinks that sometimes, don't they? And I was thinking, I'm really not sure they do, Evie. I'm not sure that every woman on her honeymoon having sex with her husband or being pounded, as she puts it, you write these brilliantly because the terms you use tell us so much about what's going on. As he pounded me, I thought, she thinks, pretending that...
Do men not think about their partner's mothers sometimes in a weird kind of...
I can't speak for all men, but there are some of us who don't.
Okay. Ask curiosity. No, maybe it's a different dynamic. But anyway, but you're right. This is Evie. This is Evie's kind of, I'm sure all women feel like this. But
she does think that all women do. Yeah, she does.
Well, she's trying to normalise herself, I guess, because she's in a very not normal position. And I think that is something universal that, when things get weird, for a long time, we all kind of say, no, this is okay. This happens to lots of people. This is fine, And I guess that's an element of the gothic as well, that gothic feeling in the book that, it's all fine, but it's not fine.
This is not the only time she fantasizes. When they're making love in the Villa Rosa,
she imagines Costas, the gardener. Yeah, the gardener with the big machete.
Walking up to the window, unbuttoning his trousers. So, I mean, she does this quite a lot. And then she has subsequently a fairly casual attitude to sexual encounters. Are we supposed to take that she's a little messed up?
Well, but are we judging her a little bit compared with some of the other characters, maybe? Because although we can't talk about Richard quite as much because of the spoiler element, yeah, I mean, is Evie messed up or not? That is, I guess, one of the discussion points of the book. And I suppose I've heard some people say that she is just quite representative of quite normal women who, yes, have this thing and that thing that they've done that perhaps wasn't how they would have planned it would go.
To be fair, you've been here before to that kind of thing before.
Oh, yeah.
I was glancing at, I think it was the Seed Collectors the other day, just seeing, hang on, what was this? And there's all sorts of, sexuality, but also this kind of sort of real earthy sexuality within the women, because it's a whole bunch of women in the Seed Collectors. And
but also it's supposed to be about biology, so that's the big key word for the Seed Collectors. So that was the one I did an MSc in ethnobotany as part of my research, and the whole thing about biology and plants, it's all about sex, plants just really exist to have this weird kind of remote sex with each other. So it was just, so that one does genuinely have a lot. Yeah.
Which of the characters was the most fun to write?
Probably Richard. And in fact...
Really?
Yeah, in a way, I'm still writing Richard because he is probably in the new book. But Richard just kind of popped up one day when I was in the New Forest. I was reading Moby Dick and suddenly this character came to me who liked running and spreadsheets and was utterly humourless. And in fact, I wrote a note to myself, I'm going to write a novel with no humour that's based around... I know.
That will be starting, because...
Yes, for the listener, Tim just made a face.
Yeah, there are no jokes in this, but it's full of liveliness and fun and not humour, but sort of crazy situations.
Yeah, or kind of dark humour, I suppose. Yeah. Or like a kind of cringy sort of... humor. Well, since we're talking about sex, Chris, my editor, who's just in here, who brought you a cup of tea, he made a note when we were editing it. So there's a scene where they've Evie and Richard have got COVID, and she performs a sexual act on him, which I won't mention, but Chris did write in the margin, while they had COVID,
Yeah, but they were living together, so...
I just responded, well, this is supposed to be gothic, so, yes.
And while she is going down on him, we can say it, he proposes, that's when he proposes
to her. That's when
he
proposes, yeah.
So, yeah, that's darkly comic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so Richard was super fun to write because he takes himself so seriously, and because I suppose actually the dark humour, I think, picks up in Richard's section because he takes himself seriously in the way he describes things.
Yeah, things that some of us might keep to ourselves.
Mm.
Even with our, I mean, even especially with our wives, he cheerfully says, you know, I hope we can get past this, and I still love you, and can we make a go of it? And you're thinking, maybe best not to have mentioned some of those things, Richard.
When Isabella finally gets into bed with him, he pretends to Evie that he thought it was Evie.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Sorry, you shouldn't laugh.
Even though he says, yeah, her breasts were completely different from yours. But I it didn't occur to me. Well,
I'd just woken up, so yeah, she yeah, smelled a bit different.
All breasts are the same, actually.
You know how I am when I've just woken up.
So that's the thing, though. When you're talking about maybe using Richard, for you, novels are playful. You like games, you like tricks, you like ambiguities. There are aspects of The Sleepwalkers that by the end of the book are still not actually clear, which you can do with a novel because it doesn't need to be, as long as you've got the sort of the layers, the cubism of being able to look at it from the various different directions.
Yes. And in fact, I've had different responses to this. Some people have said, I didn't actually know what had happened, but I didn't mind. Whereas some people have kind of worked out what happened. There is a sort of kind of definite thing that, you know, it's not one of those where I didn't decide myself, so I've just, quotes, left it open.
No, I could tell that.
It's definitely...
Because it's so tightly structured.
Yeah.
And because you're describing events from more than one perspective, they have to be the same events and they have to be had some reality, even if we get a different perspective on them.
There's even clues in terms of the structure and even what's mentioned in the contents list compared with what you've actually got in your hands. And even that question of, well, why is that thing missing and what does that mean actually happened?
My response to the ambiguity was to go back and start again. It's a novel that very, very much invites a second run through when you have those perspectives, which makes it very good value for money because you get two readings out of it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Now, I don't know if we've got across what kind of an author you are, but it seems that people do have some difficulty categorising you. Do you have any helpful pointers for people who want to know, who is Scarlett Thomas? What kind of books does she write?
Well, lately I've been kind of leaning into gothic stuff, although actually The End of Mr. Y was quite gothic too,
was,
and it gets taught on a contemporary gothic course in, I believe, Lancaster University. So
now, The End of Mr. Y was your first really big success.
Yeah.
It was the first one of yours that I read, and I went, oh, that was, because you always take us places that we're not expecting.
Even I'm not expecting that.
Is that right?
Yes.
But that's one of your tricks. You know, when I started reading this book, and I thought the first page was brilliant. I thought, and you have to know what's going to happen here. But then you keep stepping it up and taking us somewhere that it's not cozy. It's a disastrous honeymoon. But a disastrous honeymoon could be the start of any book, and then you could work it out for 300 pages. But you're not interested in that. You want to take us somewhere completely else.
Yeah, and I think it's partly because I want the reader to have fun. But I want the reader to have a particular kind of immersive fun where they actually physically feel things. So I'm quite interested in fiction that changes you physically. I suppose all fiction does, because you might, even if your heart rate increases a little bit, or you know, sweat a bit or cry at the end, whatever it is. But I'm quite interested in sensation fiction, kind of 19th century vibes there, and Wilkie Collins in particular. So while I was writing this book, The Woman in White was a big influence on me, how, you know, he really puts you in a situation and then, as you say, just ramps it up and ramps it up, and you're like, what, not another thing? Oh no, she's dead, but oh, okay, maybe she isn't. Sorry, spoilers. But I wanted to get the reader up there and sort of keep them there for quite a long time before putting them back down. So hopefully that works.
And well, yes, I suppose in a way you do. Although, again, it's almost a cliffhanger at the end. Evie saying, I must get this sent immediately. This bundle of papers which is contributing to even now.
Mm, yeah. And it's not a spoiler to say that the book ends mid-sentence as
well.
No.
Well, all the documents end mid-sentence because, of course, what you've done is they're letters and they got interrupted, or a few pages were missing, or, look, if it was good enough for Franz Kafka to finish a book on a mid-sentence, it's good enough for you, surely.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Well, when you have finished the new book, I hope you'll come and discuss that one with us as well, and we can talk some more about Richard.
Yes, I'd love to, although it might not be Richard in the end, or it might be like, is it Richard or isn't it Richard? But anyway, the book's called The Runner, and I'm about halfway through, so yes.
Oh, brilliant. Well, I look forward to it because, as I think I said before, I always read the next Scarlett Thomas book. Scarlett Thomas, thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
The book is The Sleepwalkers by Scarlett Thomas. It's published by Scribner, and I think it's a bargain at £16.99. If you've enjoyed this interview, please subscribe now on your favourite podcast player to be notified of upcoming episodes.
That was The Books Podcast, presented by Tim Haig. Email Tim on tim@bookspodcast.com, Twitter @bookspodcast, and Facebook @bookspodcasttim.
Scarlett, my producer John is having conniptions because he's gone, towels? What's this business about towels and Isabella? Tell us about the towels.
Okay, I will try and tell you about the towels in a short way. But yes, this is one of my favourite scenes to write. And like I said, it really did happen. So Evie and Richard have come to the Villa Rosa, as you said, at a kind of inconvenient time. And they've had to stay at a slightly more shit hotel before they get to the Villa Rosa. And there it was already simple. You go to reception, get your towels, lie in your sun lounger on the beach all day, give the towels back and get new ones the next day. So at the Villa Rosa, Evie tries to ask Isabella a really simple question, which is, where do we get the towels? And Isabella just sort of looks at her like, what do you mean towels? So Isabella sort of goes off quite confused and comes back with these pristine white towels and offers them to Evie.
Clearly unsuitable.
Clearly unsuitable. And she says, well, I've got these, but, you know, the beach is really very dirty.
And then, of course, you have that backwards and forwards of Evie saying, oh, well, forget it. And Isabella having to say, no, you must have them. No, we couldn't possibly. And she set her up.
Yes. And then Richard thinks that Evie's the one that's made a big fuss. You know, first of all, asking for the towels and then, you know, and then not wanting to take them. And Isabella saying, you know, oh, well, we don't have much electricity on the island and, you know, we're trying to save the environment. So she really sets Evie up to look absolutely awful. And that's when Richard gets really cross with Evie. But, you know, who was really to blame in that situation? It was really fun writing scenes like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you're right.
In the end, it may not make it in.
yes.